Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. It is Sunday night, March 27th, 2022. It's the Marks here, Daly and Hamilton, to recap what was a very, very exciting 2022 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Mr. Hamilton, welcome back. How's your weekend been, buddy?
Can I say it on air? Canada.
Say it on here.
Canada has qualified for the 2022 FIFA World Cup. I didn't think that was ever going to happen. And fingers crossed, our U.S. friends, our neighbors to the south will qualify too. But we have qualified for the first time since 1986. Are you excited?
Oh, of course I'm excited. I mean, we do talk about our other favorite sports on this podcast from time to time, but this is the biggest achievement for the Canadians men's national team in basically a generation. So I'm extremely excited about that. Shout out to Charlie Tinkler in the live chat on YouTube tonight. Charlie, how's it going, buddy? Glad to see you online and joining in. So Mark, wow, what an exciting weekend of Formula One that we saw at Jeddah this past weekend. There was a lot of drama and a lot of things going on. We didn't have a full field take to the grid on Sunday for a couple of different reasons. Yuki Tsunoda had gremlins in that AlphaTauri all weekend long. Mick Schumacher, obviously the big shunt in qualifying, which was a scary moment and which really demolished the Haas. And wisely, they kept him out just for observation and not rushing him back into the car. Because let's face it, that guy's going to be sore today hitting the wall at, what was it, about 180, 190 miles an hour. And well, let's go there. First of all, let's before we do that, I'm going to do what we rarely do, and we'll read off the race classification. First of all, winning the race, the 2022 Saudi Arabia Grand Prix, Max Verstappen for Red Bull leading home Charles Leclerc, and boy, did those two trade punches in the last several laps. Really exciting. Carlos Sainz rounding out another podium finish for him in the second Ferrari. Sergio Perez, what a tough Sunday for Checo. I feel legit bad for the guy because he did a lot more to deserve that fourth place. We'll get into that as well. George Russell for Mercedes in fifth. Esteban Ocon, sixth for Alpine. Seventh was Lando Norris for Mercedes. Pierre Gasly in the AlphaTauri. Eighth, K-Mag in the points again for the Haas Ferrari. Another good, very solid start for the season for K-Mag. And Lewis Hamilton, after a horrible Saturday in qualifying, not getting out of Q1 since the first time since, what, 2016, 2017?
2017,
like
Brazil Grand Prix.
2017, baby. Yeah, bad weekend for Lewis. Managed to claw back some points, but not a very good start to the season for him. So in the Constructors, let's go to the Drivers' Championship. First of all, Charles Leclerc leading the World Championship right now, 45 points. His teammate Carlos Sainz with 33 points. Max Verstappen scoring points for the first time this year, 25, only 3 points ahead of George Russell. Lewis Hamilton, fifth place with 16 points. Esteban Ocon, solid start to season for the Frenchman, 14 points. Sergio Perez, 12, and Kevin Magnussen, 12 points. On the constructors' side of the standings, it is Ferrari leading the way with 78 points. Mercedes with 38, only a single point ahead of Red Bull with 37. Alpine with 16. Haas with 12. Alfa Romeo with 9, Alfa Tauri with 8, and McLaren with a measly 6 points. So, Mr. H, like we said, there was a lot of things, but the two, let's talk about qualifying first of all, because there was a couple of big issues, were notable things that happened on Saturday. Number one was the accident of Mick Schumacher. Number two was Lewis Hamilton not making it out of Q1, despite his teammate going on. Mr. Saturday, George Russell, again, qualifying very well. And then Sergio Perez, putting it on poll for the first time. So I'm going to throw it to you. First of all, you can cherry pick which one of those topics you want to run with first of all. So go for it.
You're very kind. And I'm actually going to go in a slightly different direction and go a little bit off script. But I think there's a third option. And I think that option is the fact that qualifying happened at all. You know, you, me, yeah. Vincenzo, all night Friday, we're messaging each other and we're DMing and we're chatting because there was an never ending reportedly three, 4 hour driver meeting in Saudi Arabia, in Jeddah, following free practice too. Because if you were watching and consuming the Formula One Grand Prix weekend and global news, you would know that there was a strike on a Saudi Aramco oil facility within the jurisdiction of Jeddah City. And that happens, I believe, somewhere around free practice one. Free practice two was delayed. And then after free practice two, the drivers got together, the Grand Prix Drivers Association, had a long conversation. And it's been reported that a majority or a consensus of all of the drivers had decided that they didn't want to race. And it took some strong arming from Ross Brawn, Stefano Domenicali, the FIA president, and a number of the team principals to convince them with documentation and evidence provided by Saudi authorities that it would in fact be safe to race on Saturday. So there was a distinct possibility, you know, Friday night our time, that we weren't even going to have a Grand Prix weekend. And once again, Formula One found itself at this intersection of sports and entertainment in geopolitics. And I'll be very honest, there was a moment of reflection or inflection for me on Friday where I was talking to some friends and just F1 keeps finding a way to put itself in these situations based on some of the decisions it makes about who to partner with, where to locate races. So fortunately for F1 fans and those that felt the race weekend should proceed, it did. But I'll be very honest, Friday night, I'm sitting there and it's like, I don't know if I'm going to show up for another podcast because it can be very difficult sometimes to disentangle sports and entertainment with geopolitics, and F1 finds a way sometimes to put itself there. So all of that said, obviously you and I tuned in on Saturday. We tuned in on Friday. The Grand Prix weekend went ahead. Fortunately for everybody in the jurisdiction of Jeddah, there were no further strikes. There was no casualties. That's a good news story. We go into qualifying. And like you said, there's a couple of things that you could pull at. One is the shocking bounce of Lewis Hamilton not getting through Q2. And the other is the major shunt and major impact of Mick Schumacher. And if you want to pull the thread, as you would say, that's my favorite term that I've learned from you, by the way, pulling on the thread. If you pull the thread on Lewis, you can go down that channel of talking about his setup and how the car was ill-equipped or wasn't prepared. And then why did they not do a pit lane start and reset the car? And then if you want to go down the Mick Schumacher storyline, you could talk about the fact that this is an incredibly dangerous track. And maybe the changes that you and I and Vincenzo talked about a couple of days ago that were intended to make the racing experience here safer, maybe they weren't necessarily as effective as they should have been. So all of that said, I think it's kind of fortunate that there was a race at all. My honest opinion still is that the race shouldn't have gone ahead. It did. Our obligation is that we're going to show up and talk about it. And fortunately, there was no casualties or further strikes. Race weekend ahead. So in terms of qualifying, for me, I think the bigger story, even than Lewis getting bounced, is the impact of Mick, because to me, that was had a dark precedence going into a Grand Prix race. And fortunately, which we'll get to, there was no further major contact like that. But I think it just speaks to the dangers of the circuit. What about you? If you had to measure up those two that you referenced, Lewis as a shocker or the Mick contact, which of those is a bigger story for you in qualifying?
Well, they're both big stories, but for different reasons. I mean, number one, you don't want to see a driver have a big moment like that, at any time, at any race, on any track. I mean, that was a big, big shunt. I mean, just the way he went through the corner. I mean, he just got up on the curbs. And I mean, any other track that they go to, I mean, he's going to have a nice big runoff area and it's not going to be an issue. But the problem is with like these street circuits, I mean, you could maybe make the same argument or make the same case for Baku, for example, where you're racing through a city, Monaco as well, although Monaco is much lower speeds than we've seen at Jeddah, like we're seeing at Baku. But, you know, once you get off of the track, the next point of contact is going to be a concrete barrier and a chain link fence. you know, fortunately for Mick, I mean, he did, I mean, there was going to be no good way he was going to hit it. It was going to be a big whack. But I mean, fortunately, when you see the in-car camera, which it took a long time on Saturday to get that replay up and replayed on the television feed, I didn't really go back. I didn't get a chance on Saturday to go back and look for the footage, but they replayed it this morning. Prior to the Grand Prix. And, you know, he was moving out a bit, but you could tell that inside that survival cell, inside the cockpit, that stayed completely intact. And the way that the car disintegrated and the way that everything broke apart, you know, to dissipate the energy of the impact, the car did what it was supposed to do. But I was really quite shocked when they were trying to remove the car from the track after Mick had been taken. He was taken in the ambulance over to the medical center for evaluation, but they tried to hoist this thing back up, this car hoisted up onto the back of a flatbed truck, and it basically fell apart. The power unit, it just completely fell apart. So it was going to be, you know, and number one, the most important thing is always the health and safety of the driver. Fortunately, you know, Mick, other than being shaken up, it was just a precautionary, but it was going to be tough for those, mechanics to put that car back together, regardless if they decided to race today or not. So I think the decision was pretty well made for them. But I mean, it is also equally shocking for Lewis that Q1 exit just not being able to get that car set up to his liking, because that is just not a place that we're used to seeing Lewis Hamilton. You know, this is probably going to be an outlier, but it just goes to show you that there are still issues with this new Mercedes car. But on the flip side, his teammate George Russell is able to take it all the way to Q3 and qualifies in P6. I mean, if you look at Lewis's time in Q1, he set a time of 130.343 compared to George in Q3. His time was a 129.104. Did I see Q3 for Lewis? If I did, pardon me, I meant Q1. So, I mean, right there, there's over like 1.2 seconds between the two qualifying sessions. And I mean, of course, the track evolves into the, you know, conditions and the track changes over time as well. But I mean, that was really, really quite striking. And just the fact that, Lewis had those issues. And of course, some of the things that were happening on the track as well just made it difficult for him. And, you know, just to maybe just dial it back a little bit and maybe kind of work the Mick Schumacher thing back into it as well, is that despite we saw some people tagging the wall throughout the race and throughout the weekend, I was actually surprised that there weren't more incidents of contact. So despite, you know, the big one, I mean, well, one of the things we're going to think about when we look back at this race is obviously the big moment that Mick Schumacher had. But I couldn't help but think that, you know, it really is an exciting track, but is that okay? Because sure, it was exciting and fun to watch at times today, but I still just can't get it out the back of my mind that there is just an inherently dangerous nature to the circuit. And I think it's just going to be there no matter what they do and whatever changes they make to it.
Yeah, I very much agree with that assessment. And we were doing a Spaces chat earlier today, and one of the participants, I think it was Marshall, had made this kind of insightful comment that when they were designing this track, they went almost exclusively with concrete barriers and mesh catch fencing. And the reality is they could have gone with Tech Pro in a lot of the more dangerous sections, and they opted not to do that. And ultimately, I place less of the blame on the track, kind of the race organizers, than I do the FIA, because ultimately it's the FIA that certifies the track for Formula One usage, which is a little bit alarming. And I think the outcome of the race today, which obviously there was some contact with Latifi in the wall, which we'll get to, which was a big story today. Obviously, a couple of cars came together and we had some reliability issues, but I think we were incredibly lucky that we didn't have red flag conditions at any point during the Grand Prix this weekend, as we did just a couple of months ago in December. And I think that might be as much luck as it is drivers becoming more comfortable with this track, because it is just so incredibly unforgiving. And there was a couple of quotes today that I'll read. This is from Sergio Perez, and he's referring to the Jeddah Cornish track. "I think it's definitely the most dangerous place in the calendar. That's no secret about it," he said. And he continues, "It really demands a lot from the drivers, from the cars, from the teams. If you get it wrong, it can be a huge accident. I don't know if there's something we can do about turn 22 and 23 because it's a really high speed section. It's more dangerous in the race, but I think it's the same after qualifying. The last thing I want to think about is the track. And I think what compounds the issue, and this is maybe why we got a little bit lucky today, is none of these teams have set up the cars to the optimal specification, meaning that 10 races from now, 15 races from now, these cars will be evolutions beyond where they are in terms of stability and in terms of balance. And I think what we saw from Mick today, or what we saw from Mick on Saturday, was maybe partially driver error, but I think a lot of it was just balance issues. It was less that he'd hit the curb, because I think under other circumstances, he probably would have been fine. It's just that the rear of the car was so unsettled and there was so little balance in the rear wheels that it just tripped the car and triggered a spin and it started rotating. And I think that's, you know, a consequence of the fact that the cars aren't optimized, aren't fully dialed in yet. But the reason it hit a concrete wall is because there was a concrete wall there, and because this track is simply so unforgiving. And if that was at Albert Park next weekend, maybe his race weekend's over, but you know, maybe he would have settled in the gravel, or maybe he would have settled into a fence that was 100 feet away from the tarmac and the aggregate of the track. So I think it's still an incredibly dangerous track. And we had a Spaces chat on Friday, and one of our listeners, who's actually from Jeddah, a great friend of the show, he made a comment that this track is possibly so dangerous that the right thing to do might be to retire the track and resume the Saudi Grand Prix once Qiddiya is ready, which is the purpose-built dedicated circuit that's being built about an hour outside of Riyadh. Fortunately, today we were fortunate in the fact that there was only that one collision, but I think the Mick shunt illustrates how dangerous this track can be, especially with non-optimized cars.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's move along now. And we have to talk about Checo Perez, obviously. First pole position that came, 11 years into his career. And I think in general, it's been an interesting start to the season. Great start to the season for Ferrari, so-so for Red Bull, and not the greatest start Mercedes. But what a way to come back after such a disappointing weekend in Bahrain last week. Obviously, Max wins it with those thrilling last couple of laps, that fight that he had with Charles Perez. Losing my mind here, Charles Leclerc. But I mean, Checo really set the tone, because I don't think anybody expected to see him put it on pole. And I couldn't help but thinking that maybe Checo's really settling in to that really solid number two driver to give this team a 1-2 punch. And it was just really, really unfortunate that safety car came so early in the race. He had just pitted, and then you have this whole incident going on. So why did you set it up? And we can just kind of take it from there, because Checo ends up in P4, and then he passes Carlos Sainz coming out of the pits, and then he has to end up giving the place back. And again, this was triggered by Nicholas Latifi having a bit of a strange moment out of the corner, maybe just put the power down a little early, puts it into the wall, and then we have a virtual safety car, and then a full on safety car, and all these different things, which you're going to expect to see at some point at a track like Jeddah. But why don't we talk a little bit more about that? First of all, let's talk about Sergio's pole performance on Saturday.
First thing, credit is due. You know, that was an absolutely sensational lap by Sergio Perez, snatching a consecutive pole out of Charles Leclerc in the dying seconds of Q3, after there, of course, been that hour-long break because they were busy trying to clean up the accident that MSC was involved in. So he rocks a 1:28.2. I think this is an extraordinarily great time, because if you look back last year, if you look at the first ever Saudi Grand Prix, Lewis Hamilton took pole in Q3 with a 1:27.5. So he was only 0.7 off of the pole time that was set by Lewis Hamilton last year. And what's remarkable about that is, and I was talking to Tim Horaney about this earlier, so many people hold up the 2020 and 2021 Formula One cars as the gold standard, the benchmark of all-time great Formula One cars in terms of raw performance, speed, mechanical grip, etc.
Isn't that interesting, eh?
And here we are, just a couple of months later, two races into the new era, into the new world of the regulations, And we're less than a second off of the pole time that was set last year, which is absolutely remarkable. Now, of course, these cars are finding speed in different places. They're finding the speed in the straights. They are significantly slower in slow speed corners, partly because of the 18-inch wheels and tires and all that unsprung weight, partly because they're carrying extra 50 kilograms of weight, but they are significantly faster than I think where you and I had expected them to be. So all the praise in the world to Sergio Perez there.
Now, yeah, well, I mean, the speculation part of me, just to jump in, is they were expecting to be, what, maybe 4 or 5 seconds a lap slower. I mean, to be only a second off last year's pole time at this point in the evolution of these brand new cars is astounding. When you still see that a lot of these teams obviously haven't dialed these cars into where they are, and they haven't found the optimum setup. I mean, Lewis Hamilton is the perfect example there.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. And obviously, Ferrari and Red Bull are much farther down that journey than obviously Aston Martin, Williams, McLaren, and Mercedes. But don't think for a second that they're fully optimized and that they are extracting maximum performance value out of these cars, because they're not there yet. It does speak to the fact that their balance, their stability, it's in a much better place than some of these other teams. But I think Sergio deserves a significant amount of credit here, as does Charles and Carlos Sainz and Max Verstappen, because these cars are as equally unfamiliar to them as they are anyone else on the grid. You know, we'll get to Nicholas Latifi in a moment here, but he is massively struggling with these new cars and these new regulations, and Sergio Perez and Charles and Carlos and Max and Esteban and Fernando and Valtteri are obviously doing a much better job. So to your point, we'll set this up. Sergio steals pole. It's the first pole of his career. Yesterday also marked the 11th anniversary of his debut in Formula One. So it took 11 years. Congratulations, Sergio. You've got your first pole. Fantastic. We go into the race. He's clean off the line. We have a clean first lap. I was expecting a much messier start to this race. We were very, very fortunate. And then in lap 16, Nicholas Latifi, battling nobody but himself, ultimately hits a wall. And this is something that I talked to Tim quite a bit about earlier today, is this seemed to be a combination of a number of factors. And I think the first thing I want to speak to here is that almost immediately after it happened, Nicholas was interviewed in the paddock, and they asked him, "Hey, what had happened? How are you feeling?" He's like, "You know what? Physically, I'm fine." He was incredibly critical of the car. And this is not something I'm used to seeing out of Nicholas. He's usually one of those guys that we, us. We won. Or, you know, we have work to do. But he was incredibly frustrated with the car. He was incredibly frustrated with the progress of development. He was incredibly frustrated with where the car was. And he spoke to, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but he spoke to the fact that he approached that corner in lap 16 no differently than he did at any other point in the race. And what he was alluding to or inferring was the lack of stability in the back end was so poor that he broke grip, the rear end stepped out, and again, Jeddah being Jeddah, it's such an unforgiving track, he had nowhere to go but make contact with that concrete barrier. So he goes in. Now, timing couldn't have been worse for Sergio Perez, because Sergio Perez, looking to fight off the potential undercut from Charles Leclerc, had just pitted for fresh tires. The fact that he had just pitted meant he was out of fresh tires. Like you said, there was a virtual safety car, a safety car, and then there was a swarm into the garages to swap for new tires. And Christian Horner had an interesting quote this weekend as well following the race. And he said that, you know what, sometimes when there's a safety car, it helps you, and sometimes it hurts you. And I don't know that he was necessarily thinking about Abu Dhabi when he made that comment, but the irony there was very, very strong. But ultimately, it put Sergio Perez in a bad position. So he lost the lead, though through no fault of his own, but it then set Charles Leclerc in a really good position to chase a race win.
You know, because it was interesting, prior to that happening, you heard like some of the comments on race radio from the Ferrari pit wall, telling Charles that they're going to come in, and I think the direct quote, pardon me, was box to overtake. So they are obviously thinking of the undercut.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden this drama happens, and it was just so unfortunate for Sergio. But then when he's going around, and then everybody sort of floods into the pits, and they all start filtering back out on the track, he has that little moment with Carlos Sainz. Carlos comes in, he kind of squeezes him and he passes him, and then, you know, kind of gained an advantage, and Carlos on the radio right away. And then Sergio did do the right thing. You know, the team told him to give him give the place back when they went back to racing. And unfortunately for Sergio at that point, he just wasn't able to find the same pace in those subsequent phases of the race as he did to start. I couldn't help but feeling bad for him, because he looked so good in qualifying. He looked good through that first, 14 or 15 laps before Nicky put it into the wall. And it's just kind of a reminder of how cruel Formula One can be at sometimes. It's just like, you could do everything right, and then for circumstances beyond your control, you can have it snatched away from you. But I mean, at least on the flip side, at least what it did ultimately set up for was that epic battle between Charles and Max in those last, about 6 or 7 or 8 laps or whatever it was. Because then at the end, you know, we had another safety, because we had that bizarre situation where we saw like 3 cars retire all in the same lap. We had first Fernando Alonso, then we had Danny Ricciardo, and then we had Valtteri Bottas. And Bottas was another guy I was feeling really bad for, because, you know, I know in previous years, you know, he was a bit of, I don't want to say a little bit kind of like a bit of a joke on the show, but we kind of made light of the fact that, you know, it wasn't a realistic thing for him to sort of come out and kind of say that he was going to be a title challenger to Lewis at Mercedes. I mean, he did a great job there, but I really liked what I've seen from Valtteri at Alfa Romeo over the first couple of races. I loved seeing him up there in those points paying positions. He was up there as high as about 6. I think he was running in P6 at the time when he retired. I thought, you know what, Valtteri, good for you. You know, you do this wonderful job at Mercedes. Ultimately, you find yourself the odd man out when the musical chairs stop. They want to look to the newer, younger, hotter prospect in George Russell, which, you know, kind of makes sense considering where Valtteri is in his career and, you know, his age over 39, I think he's 31, 32, something like that. So you can see that they're looking at some succession planning here and having somebody in place for when Lewis decides to walk away from Mercedes in Formula One, right? But anyways, Valtteri did make that move to Alpha, and I was a little bit, I'd have to say, skeptical when it happened. I'm just like, oh, Valtteri, you know, is that really the right place for you to go? That seems like such a backward step, considering how poor they were last year. But they've started very well this season. And, well, I mean, obviously, besides the, you know, a DNF today for mechanical issues, but that was just so strange, the way that we saw them all sort of pull over to the side of the track there at one after another, another tough race for Ricciardo and for McLaren. And then Alonso was looking really racy. And then, you know, we should also bring this into the discussion. We're going to talk about how exciting it was to watch Max and Charles over those last couple of laps. That wasn't the only moment of excitement that we saw throughout the day. We saw plenty of passing up and down the field from front to end. And in between, we saw some great hard racing between the two Alpine drivers of Esteban Ocon and Fernando Alonso early in the race. And that was exciting to watch. I know that they had Otmar Szafnauer, our team principal of Alpine, on the broadcast with Crofty and Jensen Button at one point. But you could, I thought it was great, you know, because the TV producers actually had the camera on Szafnauer at a couple of times. You could just almost see him biting the nails there. That was great fun to watch.
Flashbacks to Force India when Esteban Ocon would battle with Sergio Perez.
Yeah, right.
Oh, exactly. My goodness. I have to say, last weekend, I had caution because Bahrain was so excited or so exciting. And I think we were all caught off guard and pleasantly surprised by the amount of close racing there was and how close cars were able to get to the car in front of them. But I had cautioned everybody that Jeddah is not going to be a good litmus test for the new regulations because it's not designed for really great racing and overtaking. There's some high-speed sections where DRS can be really effective. But aside from that, don't expect to see a lot of great racing. And I couldn't have been more wrong with my expectations about this race weekend. This weekend was Bahrain amplified by 10 based on what we'd seen. And you're absolutely right. Early in the race, we saw an epic duel between Esteban Ocon and teammate Fernando Alonso. And obviously by the end, Fernando Alonso had demonstrated he had better pace. Otmar's reactions on the pit wall were absolutely classic. And post-race, Julian Palmer was quoted as saying he'd run out of what is the word? I'm going to need your help with this one because it's not a word I use very often. But he had run out of superlatives. Is that a word mm-hmm. that he'd run out yes, of superlatives when he was calling the race? And I thought that was fantastic and really helped summarize what we'd seen this race weekend. But if we want to use Bahrain and we want to use Jeddah as a sample of whether or not the regulations are working, I think what we've seen so far is a resounding yes. And I think it's only going to get better. And it probably speaks to the fact that, you know, next year, maybe the year after, DRS won't be a part of the sport anymore because a muted version of DRS was held over simply because they weren't fully confident that the effects of the regulation would be fully felt yet. And so far, it looks like they absolutely are. And just to touch on those three coincidental DNFs at the very end of the race, lap 37, lap 38, we saw Alonso, who had been in that really great mini duel with Kevin Magnussen. He suddenly loses power, tries to get his way back to the pits. Simultaneously, Daniel Ricciardo, he's downshifting, going into a corner, using the engine brakes to slow the car. He loses what I think was probably the drivetrain or the drive shaft, ultimately has to jump on the brakes so his front tires lock up. He can't even get to the pit. And then Valtteri Bottas had spoken after the race about the fact that he was having major engine temperature issues. So he was trying to get the car in clean air to help cool down the engine. But the engine was getting so hot, they feared that they would have a complete engine freeze or complete engine lockup, and they would be penalized by having to take a power unit earlier in the season than expected. So they retired the car knowing that if they continued, they would have lost the power unit and not finished the race anyway. So they were just being very conservative. But on the Valtteri Bottas piece, you know, the other thing that we should probably remember too is it was widely reported last year that he was being wooed by Williams, his old team, the team that he broke into Formula One with. And you look at his decision making now, I thought Williams would be a really great fit for him based on the trajectory and the transformational change that we're seeing with that team institutionally. I thought that was going to be a really great fit. Went to Alfa Romeo. I looked at last year. They finished with 13 points. Is this a great place for him to go? It has been a fantastic fit for him. And if you look at Williams, Williams is a total disaster this year. The car is fundamentally flawed. Nicky is struggling badly. And I hate to say it, but I think people have been sympathetic to him. Despite being a pay driver, he's very, very likable. He's crashed out now in two of his last three races. He crashed out in qualifying. He, from a mental, psychological perspective, he's clearly in a bad place. I hope he can get himself reset. Albert Park, although changed, should be a little bit more forgiving. Of course, we haven't been there in 3 years. He's never raced a Formula One car there. Alex Albon, obviously, he was in contention for finishing the race. He ultimately comes together with Lance Stroll. I think in hindsight, that was very much an Alex Albon misjudgment, going into that corner a little bit hot. Probably didn't dive bomb Lance, as Lance described on the radio, but Williams is in a world of hurt. But clearly, Valtteri was getting some really great advice when he made that decision to go to Alfa Romeo for 2022 and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Mark, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we've got some little word bites, if you want to call it that. Some little quotables. We'll talk about those in just a moment, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the show. You're listening to the podcast, as always, Up to Speed with Formula One and the Marks, and we are talking about the 2022 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Obviously, a very eventful weekend, very eventful race. Some of the quotes that came out, Sergio Perez, that losing the win in Saudi hurts because of the ill-timed safety car. Well, obviously, not much more can add to that. Charles Leclerc said there was not much more that he could do to win the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Oh, just a little add on there. So Alex Albon's been hit with a 3-grid place penalty for that move and that accident that he was involved with Lance Stroll in the closing laps of the race on Sunday. Lewis Hamilton says that Mercedes is still far off Ferrari and Red Bull, which I think is pretty obvious. And they got a lot of work to do there for the silver arrow. So where should we go with that one? Oh, there was one other quote there that Verstappen said he played smart tricks in order to beat Charles Leclerc for the win in Saudi. So there's plenty of interesting things there. Let's talk about Mercedes first of all, because the other stuff, talking about the track and the race itself, I think we've talked about. Do you want to talk about a couple of those quotes there from the Red Bull and the Ferrari drivers?
We should probably talk about that duel between Leclerc and Max before we sign off too, but I am hungry to talk about Mercedes. I'm hungry to talk about Mercedes.
Yeah, I just want to get that one out of the way because I want to finish with a bit of a bang, and I think that that's only fair considering this race finished with a real bang with that battle between Charles Charles and Max. But Lewis very much, saying that, just bluntly saying that they're still far off of Ferrari and Red Bull. And I think it's obvious. And unless they can really turn it around, that we're going to be seeing more of the same. I think we're going to see Ferrari and Red Bull battling race in and race out. And even though George had a good result on Saturday, Lewis did sneak into the points after all that. They were quite a bit off of the pace, and they've got a lot to do to close that gap to the Red Bulls and the Ferraris if they want to get into that conversation for race wins and obviously have their name thrown into the hat for title contenders this year.
I think they've got some fundamental challenges with that car. I think they knew about these problems coming out of Barcelona. I think by the time they got to Bahrain for winter testing, they had a pretty good idea of what they needed to do. But you can't simply produce a new part overnight. It takes weeks to get a part designed and into development. The pipeline journey can be 2, 3, 4 weeks or many, many months. Now, it's reported that Mercedes is bringing a brand new floor to Australia and that they should have a pretty significant overhaul of the car by the time we get to Imola. My thought is the biggest issue that they're probably having right now is related to downforce. And I think it's because they projected that they were going to be generating significantly more downforce through the floor than they actually are. But they are having significant issues sealing air under the car. And what's happening is they're encountering the porpoising issue. So I think what they've ended up having to do to mitigate the amount of porpoising they're experiencing is they've had to raise the ride height. So by raising the ride height, they're mitigating or limiting the amount of porpoising, but they're also sacrificing or compromising downforce in the process. Now, where I was very, very surprised this weekend is clearly they went with two different setups for Russell's car and for Lewis's car going to the qualifying session. So when we talk about a setup, we're talking about, hey, how did you dial in the suspension? How stiff were the dampers? What was the specific ride height? Where did you place the winglets? All those little pieces. In this case, they went with a different strategy for Russell than they did with Lewis. I think what Lewis experienced was nothing short of a disaster from a performance perspective. I can't necessarily fault him entirely, but obviously it's a combination of the car plus the driver. It's very possible that Lewis did a sensational job. We just don't know it because he didn't get out of Q1. What I was very surprised about was the fact that he started on the grid. My assumption was that he was going to start from the pit lane, which would have given the team an opportunity to significantly rework the setup. But when I was talking to Tim Haraney earlier today, he had made a comment that the setup that he was actually running for qualifying was better suited for the race. So there weren't really many improvements. And this is what I was reading into what Tim was saying. There weren't really many sensational improvements that they could have made to that setup that would have put him in the pit lane. So they ended up starting him on the grid because it was pretty much dialed in as it should have been for the race. And to Hamilton's credit, he did a really great job of running 40 plus laps deep on that hard tire that he started on, which is insanely good tire management. But there was a flaw from the team in the sense that they only called him in the box towards the end when he was a couple of hundred meters past the entrance to the pit lane. And he was obviously frustrated by that. And following the race, he was interviewed in the post-race show. And they specifically asked him, like, hey, how are you feeling about your performance today? And I quote from Lewis Hamilton, personally, I feel like I maximized everything. And he continued, I don't know if we did as a team. And it's not often that Lewis can be so pointed. And I talked earlier about the fact that Lance Stroll is often very inclusive. Like, we did great, or we've got some opportunities. The last time I remember Lewis speaking like this was Monaco, when he was very, very frustrated and shared some, I would say, negative thoughts on the team radio as he came in seventh, I think, in that Grand Prix. But he's very, very clear that he feels like he's dialed in 100% and extracting maximum value from that car, and that as a greater team, there's significant work left to do. So we should see a new floor in Albert Park in 2 weeks, but a total upgrade and a total overhaul of this car isn't due for a few weeks after that. And then in the meantime, it's not as though Ferrari and Red Bull themselves won't continue to bring upgrades. So the good news for Mercedes is obviously Russell's much more comfortable with the car than obviously Lewis is at this point, not to take away from his pole or his podium in the first race, but there's still 21 Grand Prix left. This season is a marathon. It is not a sprint.
Yeah, totally. And the one thing just to that point is that I find fascinating that George seems to feel a little bit more at home in that car compared to Lewis, is that Lewis has been involved in the process that involving the design and the build of this car. So it's not like this is a bit of a surprise. I mean, George being a reserve driver and then a Williams driver, I mean, he's not really been privy to everything else that they've been discussing. But yeah, like you say, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. Long way to go. But will they be able to close that performance gap to Red Bull and Ferrari soon enough? That's the $64,000 question. We'll just have to watch this space, as they say.
Right.
And talking about space is another good battle that we would be remiss if we didn't mention along the way here, is the good scrap that we saw between K-Mag and the Haas and Fernando Alonso and the Alpine before Fernando's untimely retirement there. But you have to think with K-Mag's 2 points finishes in the first couple of races here, that despite the lack of sponsorship on that car, you have to think that for potential sponsors, that Haas is looking pretty good now, because if MSC can get himself sorted out a little bit. I mean, the way that I see it, if Kevin Magnussen is able to put this thing into Q3, he's able to bring it home in the points and things like that. Where I'm seeing Mick Schumacher on the development curve of his career is that he should be able to take this car. He should be able to take it easily into Q2, should be fighting for points at some point in the season, if not already. I think he realizes that himself. And a team that's been a bit of a target for criticism on this show for the longest time is not looking too bad at the moment, are they?
Not at all. And I promise you that Mick Schumacher, in putting aside the fact that there was that unfortunate shunt in qualifying and the car was destroyed, he has learned more. I promise you, he has learned more about being a Formula One driver in the first two Grand Prix of this season than he did all last year, because it is so important for a young driver to be racing aside an experienced driver, because the amount of intel that is shared from one to the other is immense. And even though he didn't get to compete in the Grand Prix this weekend, he would have been sitting in that garage absorbing every ounce of data that was coming off K-Mag's car, the data, the telemetry, the braking points, when he was on the throttle, when he was applying the battery. Like, all of that information is incredibly valuable to MSC in his personal development. And last year, when he was racing next to Nikita Mazepin in an absolute write-off of a car, there was no data being made available to him that would help his development. He is learning so much being partners with K-Mag. So unfortunately, he didn't get on the grid today. He does deserve praise for getting into Q2 this weekend. That was fantastic. But he is going to learn so much by being able to observe and watch K-Mag, the way he prepares for the race, the way he conducts himself, as well as looking at the telemetry and data that is being extracted from his car in every practice and every qualifying session. And let's be very clear here that K-Mag's obviously got that multi-year deal with Haas, but Mick Schumacher is very much the future of the sport, and it behooves Haas to do everything they can to assist with his development. So really great situation all of a sudden for Mick. You know, a month ago, I was saying this is a nightmare situation for him. All of a sudden, he finds himself in a really great situation. And like you said, from a sponsorship perspective, Haas, incidentally, is an absolute blank canvas, literally a blank canvas, because it's a white car without a lot of sponsors. But you have to think there are some big American companies that are now salivating, and German companies possibly salivating at getting their logos on that car.
You know, I think we have to give K-Mag props, because this is a guy that came in only a week and a half before the season after Haas parted ways with Nikita Mazepin, a guy that has been out of Formula One for a year. I mean, he was previously with Haas in 2020 when then they parted ways with him and Romain Grosjean. Rogero went over to IndyCar. Kevin Magnussen's been racing in endurance cars for the last year. He comes in and basically looks like he hasn't skipped a beat in Formula One. And I think that was one of the comments that Jenson Button had made during the commentary today, that Magnussen was complaining how sore his neck was, or stiff it was, just from a conditioning point of view, and the excessive G-forces that that he's been subjected to this over the course of the weekend. And, you know, it's just different than the type of racing that he's been doing over the past over the past year. But I think that he's done an amazing job to come into a team that clearly needed somebody like himself, an experienced journeyman in Formula One, take this car by the scruff of the neck, so to speak, and just go out there and put some decent laps down. And he's had two really, really, really good races to start the year. This is a team that's really struggled. And like I say, I mean, we've been very critical about them. I know a lot of people in our community, a lot of, you know, they've been very critical about them too. But you can't help but feel that they themselves, Haas, I mean, must be feeling a lot better now compared to where they, you know, started last year, and especially where they finished 2021. I think they're in a good spot now, or more promising spot than they were even just a couple of weeks ago, right?
It's where I get a little bit frustrated with Nicholas Latifi. Obviously, we're big homers, and we're always going to cheer for the Canadian drivers, but Nicholas Latifi's here two races into this season. He's looking extraordinarily poor out there, and his teammate's not looking a lot better. And you talk about the fact that he's struggling to come to grips with this new package and the personality of these cars, and how to turn them in, and when to get on the brakes, and when to find optimum grip. But to your point, Kevin Magnussen had no involvement in the development of this car, wasn't in Spain. He gets thrown into that seat almost immediately before the first Grand Prix of the season, and he finishes fifth. It would have been one thing if he'd come in midway last season in a car that he'd driven before and he was familiar with it, but these cars are 50 kilograms heavier than anything he's ever driven before from a Formula One perspective. The unsprung weight, the 18-inch wheels and the tires, it is fundamentally a different racing discipline, specifically compared to Indy, but even compared to what Formula One was last year. So again, I don't think you can understate the contributions that he's made so quickly. And this is where I get a little bit frustrated once again when I look at Lance Stroll and I look at Nicholas Latifi. I'm like, you guys were involved in the development of these cars. You were in the Sims, you were in Spain, were in Spain, you were in Bahrain. And I get it, Nicholas Latifi missed a lot of time because of the brake fire. But ultimately, I'm far less sympathetic to those two drivers than I ever have been before. When somebody like Kevin Magnussen can jump into a Haas and score double points finishes in the first two Grand Prix of the 2022 championship.
Yeah, great comparison. I think that's a very, very astute observation on your behalf, Mark. So, I mean, we've touched on it here and there throughout the show, but you know, much. I hope the show has been a little bit as almost as exciting as the race itself. Probably not, but
it's been about as long.
It's been about as long.
I'm teasing.
not quite. Anyways, the last several laps of the race was a real treat to watch. It was some great racing between Max Verstappen, some just wonderful moves to take the lead from, you know, away from Charles, and Charles to take it back. The way that these two went, and the way that they kind of gave each other the thumbs up out of the cockpit after they crossed the finish line. I thought it was wonderful. Anyways, Max had to say, quote, "Yeah, it seems like once you get quite close, when you get within half a second, you can actually have a good exit. And I think that makes it a lot more tricky to actually do the pass, let's say in the last corner compared to last year. So it's a lot harder to plan your pass. It wasn't as easy playing smart tricks in the last corner, but eventually I managed to get ahead. But then after that, he was constantly in the DRS, and then with the yellow flags on the last lap, just not knowing how much you can lift, whether it is allowed or not," end quote. So, I mean, Max obviously trying to play a bit of the mental game to get around Charles there, but also an interesting admission, just the way that the cars are. Yeah, it's easy to follow, but they're obviously not 100% understanding or used to the way that you know, these cars behave and react, because he said he just wasn't able to plan it quite as maybe he would have done it in the past. I mean, this is compared to what Charles Leclerc told Sky Sports after the race, quote, "I don't think there was much more that I could do. There was one opportunity that we missed a little bit with the yellow flag in turn one, so we didn't have the DRS there, and it could have been an opportunity to at least be alongside Max at the end of the straight. Apart from that, I think we did everything right as a team. Strategy, pit stops, the dummy call and Checo at the beginning, so we were working well as a team. I think the only thing that we missed this race was maybe a bit of a lower downforce level, but development will be key this year, and we need to push it to the maximum," end quote. So that was very you know, some interesting comments there from Charles Leclerc as well. That was really interesting too, with the dummy on Checo. I mean, that worked out, you know, perfectly for Ferrari. Obviously, they could not have foreseen Nicky putting it to the wall, and then the safety car and all that. But I mean, it they really did set it up nicely, and it's just a shame that we didn't actually get to see that, because they really tried to sell that whole pass to overtake things, and, you know, Checo went in first. But I remember when watching the race that you know, my wife made the interesting comment. It's like, oh, that's interesting from Ferrari, but let's not forget how good that Red Bull are when it comes to strategizing and coming up with their own you know, pit stop timings and things like that. And you know, it was just a shame we didn't get to see that happen. You know, first of all, the dummy, and whether or not the strategy that Ferrari had was going to work or not. What are your thoughts, Mark?
This was a very disjointed Grand Prix weekend. In a lot of ways, I don't think we're going to be able to quickly get past the circumstances of Friday. But if we look at what was happening on the track in isolation of the greater geopolitical context, I think we saw some really interesting things beginning to happen. And that is the emergence of immense racecraft that we haven't seen before, right? Like, if we were talking about a Grand Prix last year, more often than not, we would probably be talking about stewarding decisions and the fact that track limits weren't called and there was contact in a corner and it was called one way versus how it was called the prior week, et cetera. But I think what we're beginning to see is that this could be a championship whose conversation and narrative is dominated by what's happening on the track in a good way.
And so, and it should be, yeah.
Absolutely. And what we saw over those last eight laps and what we saw between K-Mag and Hamilton and K-Mag and Alonso and Ocon is actual Formula One racing. Like, we're actually seeing a motor race. And what we saw between Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen over those last eight laps was absolutely exceptional racing. And it wasn't just a matter of one driver getting on the throttle and trying to pass another. There was actual strategy and racecraft. And, you know, we talked last week about the fact that twice Charles Leclerc had let Max through knowing that he could get him in a DRS zone. And he let Max through once this race and quickly got him. And then Max realized, aha, I can't allow that to happen again. And he didn't fall for it the fourth time. And just the back and forth and the racecraft between the two of them was exceptional. And again, this is given the fact that they have very little experience with these cars. They're still learning the cars. They're still learning how closely they can follow. They're still learning the toe. They're still learning the grip. The fact that we saw such great racing today is reflective of something very special that could be upon us, which is a fantastic 2022 championship. But all the credit in the world to both of those drivers, because those last eight laps were absolutely thrilling. And then you have to factor in as well, the race was decided by 0.5 seconds. As much as Verstappen seemed to be building on that lead at the end and clearly had better tires or better grip in those rear tires, he only won the race by 0.5 seconds. Just phenomenal. I don't think any of us could have asked for more. And ultimately, if the racing is like this right down to the wire in the final race of the season in November, I don't care who wins, as long as we're treated to racing like this every single week, because this is what we tune in for. And I think you and I have been desensitized in a way, because we consume Formula One to such a degree, and we have for so long, that over the last 6 or 7 years, we've become accustomed to the absence of racing, that if a team scores a win, maybe it's because of strategy, maybe there's a DNF, maybe someone takes advantage of a safety car. We don't typically see a lot of people jostling for position by actual racecraft. And that's what we're seeing this year. So incredibly exciting. Kudos to Max Verstappen, a huge win starting fourth in the grid. Charles Leclerc, so close, 0.5 seconds off of starting the championship with back-to-back wins. But I'm sure we'll see an awful lot of these two as the season continues on.
Yeah, me too. I really hope that that's just the way it's going to play out, because it was exciting. I mean, I was jumping out of my chair. We all were. It was just a lot of fun to watch. And again, it is exciting to see the way that these cars are developing, that the racing that they'd promised, and really, I guess maybe they said it was going to happen, and then maybe they had their fingers crossed that they'd be able to deliver on that. So it's been a fascinating and exciting start to the season. It was just obviously unfortunate for Red Bull in Bahrain last week that they had that double DNF again right at the finish there, which was incredible. But it's just it's all these sort of interestingness, little subplots and little storylines, and all these little things that happen in and around every race in every season in Formula One. But we're two races into it. The season is well and truly on. We get a week's break here before we head back to Australia for the first time in a couple of weeks for the weekend of the 8th, 9th, and the 10th of April. So that'll be great to get back there. Excited to see what the new changes to the Albert Park track are going to be like, because we didn't unfortunately see that circuit last year. It sounded like it was going to happen at some point, and then it didn't. This year it's on for sure. So, you know, is it going to be more of the same? I certainly hope so, but my skepticism, or maybe not my skepticism, but maybe any questions I had that maybe Bahrain was a bit of a fluke, I think was maybe downplayed a little bit, that these cars and this these new regs are for real, they're legit, and I really hope that we see more of the more of the same in Australia the week after next.
You know, a couple of quick updates before we turn off the lights, which is another term I've lifted from you. I should probably get an F1 fantasy update. So here is here's the proverbial weekly update for the Scuderia F1 featuring Vincenzo Landino F1 Fantasy Super League. So not a lot of movement at the top this week. Currently number one, and again, I still can't get my head wrapped around this, we have 2,016 entries in our in our fantasy league. Thank you to everyone for participating. Number one, though, Jesse H from Canada with 561 points. Number two, Sean B with 538 points. Number three, this individual, for whatever reason, didn't actually label their team, so I can't assign credit, but 525 points. Number four, Edward Jason S. Haas Power ?520 points. Next up, number five, Rubens Ferrari, Ruben J with 518 points. Arter P is number six with 516 points. Matthew M from the US, number seven with 510 points. Number eight, Diavolo Scalato, Jason P from the US with 507 points. Number nine, William C with 501 points. Number 10, Cargo Fast, Reed S from Canada with a whopping 496 points. I'm currently ranked 280th, I think, so I am not doing particularly well, but kudos to everybody that is doing well. And just a reminder, too, of two things. One, we're dropping a podcast interview this week with Seth Whiteberg. Seth is a writer and TV producer in the United States that's worked extensively with podcasters, including Netflix. He was an executive producer on Patriot Act, which is one of my favorite shows on that platform. He's going to join join us this week to do an interview talking about the mechanics and the business side of putting together a show like Drive to Survive. Next week, we have an interview with Elizabeth Blackstock, which we'll speak to a little bit more next week. And also, if you're interested, I joined Tim Harani this week to talk about the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix with him. So if you're interested, highly recommend you subscribe to and check out this week's Racing Pod.
Yeah, exactly. You can find that at tsn.ca/TSN-racing-pod. You can search up Tim on social media at Tim Harani, and you can find his podcast anywhere you get your Formula One podcast. And that is it. That is a wrap for the show tonight. You can give us a follow on Twitter at Scuderia F1 pod. That's all one word. And you can give me a follow at Mark Daly F1 and Mr. Hamilton at Mark in Van City. And that's a wrap. We'll be back in a couple of days with Mr. H's interview with Seth Whiteberg, and then back with the weekly news show at the end of the week. And boy, we've certainly hit the ground running here on the podcast. And thank you all once again for joining in. Thank you for the emails, for the comments. Thanks for all of you in the live chat tonight, or the live stream on YouTube. Great to see a bunch of you out on late on a Sunday night. And that's it, guys. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again in a couple of days. Bye for now.